Or good, I can do it then.
You just roll the ball.
You know, we were, Chris was thinking about having Wayne come and do it, but Wayne's had some bad.
Okay.
After we. Thank you again, Father, for the evening, the opportunities that are ours in it, and for your word. And we're grateful we don't face enemies blind. We're in your book. We can understand exactly what it is to confront us. And as we've had the opportunity to take time to look at the world system, may the time we spend be of value tonight. Then we'll thank you in Christ's name. Amen. Okay, we've kind of worked our way down the world system. We've gone through human government. We've gone through commerce. We have gone through amusements. We've gone through secular education. And we are on page 94, which is human moral religion. And we got down to letter B in the middle of 94. So that's the status of everything. In that matter, so you can kind of get an idea of where we are. Now, as I've been doing in these notes, I've been crowding things together when I don't intend to spend a lot of time on them. It's hard for me to take anything out of my notes. Once it's there, you know, it's almost impossible for me with a good conscience to take them out. I have, but you still have a lot here. And the value of it, of course, is that we do have the opportunity to, you know, if you're interested and you want to go after it somewhere along the line, that's there. I mean, I've done a lot of work on it, and I don't know, we had a bit of a suggestion last night that we might maybe do some, assign some homework in evening school.
I thought that was a pretty good one.
To volunteer. Yeah, we were talking resurrection life and eternal life. And Tanya was saying, you know, I need to make a chart so I can figure that out. And so we might just do that because we're headed that direction. And we talked about resurrection life. I didn't realize how complex that seems to be to some. But we will be doing something anyway. We had an interesting evening last night. It was really a good evening. It was great. It's just everybody is having such a grand time. And, of course, with me without a coat and tie, that kept him at ease.
Yeah, Benny said to me, he said, getting class, it's time to rock and roll. And I said, ooh, first no tie, now he's going to rock and roll. What next? those people have been, I've been going down since probably in early February, I think. And the people there, it's they get along like it's a church setting. I mean, they really get along well, and there's a good cohesion with the people. They enjoy what's going on, they have fun with it sometimes. Mm-hmm. And they ask some good questions, and of course, then they get off on some rabbit trails. But usually, they're worth following.
That's how learning happens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's been interesting how God's put different people in on it.
That one couple last night, I wonder how much, I was thinking about that, I wonder how much they knew, because you were just going along with just the stuff. I think to myself, every point he's making would be a sermon they should hear to understand. And they just, you know... I don't know. They seem like they were following. At least I was kind of watching them, and they seem like they were keeping.
Yeah, I'm watching. I'm getting some head nods and that kind of thing. And they were writing notes real fast sometimes. We had a couple that came with Richard Truman. So, okay. When we look at the works of the religious works of the flesh, again, it's human religion. It would be easy to go off on a side and talk about the way different religions handle different works of the flesh in different ways. And it's so interesting how people, again, have that problem. They look at similarity, and they forget they need to look at the differences. And there are major differences.
I was just thinking, with some religions like Islam, could you put zeal in as being a religious work of the flesh? It could become one, couldn't it?
Oh, yeah.
But you don't have it on. I thought that might be one that we could consider kind of as a. It could be used a number of places, but it would definitely fit in here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, zeal and aretheia. You know, I mean, you have all these different. I mean, you know, where one religious, one work of the flesh is, they're all going to jump aboard. I mean, look at hatred. You look at Islam and its more, what do you want to call it, orthodox situation. I mean, they absolutely hate Christians. Look what's happening in Egypt. We're not reading about it in our papers. They're burning churches, they're killing Christians, and not many people are doing anything about it. They're Coptic Christians, but they've been there as long as Islam.
What is Coptic?
The Copts. C-O-P-T-S.
Oh, okay.
They are like a spring offspring of Romanism. They came out early. So it was a Roman kind of church when Constantine declared they didn't have any trouble with it. And so if you are interested, well, what can I say? There's a way to ID Coptic Christians because they don't mind wearing a little jewelry.
So it's not a nationality, it's more of a sect.
Yeah, it's a sect of Christianity. So it's like, you know, you have Russian Orthodox, Greek Orthodox, and the Copts or the Egyptian kind of thing.
Okay.
But they have a cross, and they're more ornate than my little thingy, and they'll wear them around their neck. I haven't been there, I think I've been there twice in my experience here, and it's been many, many years. There's a restaurant in Portland called Mummies. And it's an Egyptian restaurant. And it was in the entertainment book, and Pat and I would then, we could go out, and, you know, two for one was reachable. And so we went there a couple times off of the two for one coupons. And it was funny, we went in, it was down underneath a building, down in the basement. And you walk, it's really kind of weird when you go in. Nicely situated underneath there, but and we were seated, and the, I think it was the owner that seated us, and he had a cross. It was a silver cross about that tall in a shape like that. It has a hollow circle in the middle, and sometimes it'll have, you know, be more ornate and all of that. Well, he had one on a pretty heavy gold chain, and as soon as we sat down, I said, okay, I may have talked to Pat about it. I said, we are in a restaurant that's operated by Coptic Christians. And I didn't say why, because I used to like to do that. I play games sometimes. And she'd think, you know, how did you know that? I didn't see any tracks in your rack or anything. And that's what that was. And so they're very works-oriented and sacramental in their way. It's very quite different.
Much like the Catholic, or very similar?
Well, similar, but not, you know, like Greek Orthodox. They're more Greek than Roman, because came out of the Eastern Church. And the Eastern Church was where Russian Orthodox and Greek Orthodox, you know, the problem with the iconoclastic controversy over whether you had idols that were statues, or whether you had idols that were pictures. And I'm halfway being sarcastic when I say that. But anyway, it's interesting how those people have been there so long, and they've been part of the whole thing. They haven't been the key business people. It's what has been interesting. The Jewish community in Egypt had been more in the business side of things. But these were, you know, laborers and that kind of thing. And so, you know, the hatred that is there, and, I mean, all of a sudden everything's loose and you've got a big bunch of problems. And that's hatred. So there are a lot of works of the flesh that will tag. And that's like, you know, we look at Cain and Abel on that issue. How many works of the flesh are involved there? You've got all kinds of them. And our religious works of the flesh were not real evident in Genesis, but we sure have in 1 John 3. So, there are different appetites that people have in the sin nature, and they cater to them in different ways. You know, and Muslim going into a Catholic cathedral would be totally unimpressed. Whereas a Catholic could go into a mosque and would be absolutely unimpressed. And on either count would be the kind of artwork. Because if a Muslim went into a Catholic church, you have all the idols. I mean, all of the, you know what I'm saying, images. And you have no representation in humans in Islam, in their architecture. That's why there's so much geometry. Some of them will have animals, but no humans. And in fact, in some countries, if you do certain pictures in artwork, you could end up either spending time in direct jail or trying to find your head after they cut it off in that matter. I mean, it's that bad. Stories. We had a lady in the church in El Sobrante, and her husband worked for the Corps of Engineers, and he was assigned with the Corps in Saudi Arabia. They were in Jeddah and working on building an airport over there, an air base. And so she was not exactly the kind of woman that functioned in an Islamic manner. I mean, they can't drive in Saudi Arabia, and they can't go anywhere without being accompanied by a male who was to be a relative if they could. And she didn't exactly like that, and if you were doing business, you had to let the male do the dickering. Well, she got into this thing. She wanted something to do, and she decided she was going to buy rugs, Persian rugs. And so it just drove her nuts, because she'd go to these rug dealers, but they kind of liked her because she had some money. And she'd wheel and deal, and I mean, one night in my living room, I had probably $500,000 in rugs rolled out. I mean, there were, I mean, on the retail markets where she had wheeled and dealed and the whole thing. And one of the rugs, she said, I brought it because I want you to see what you can figure out on it. And it had human figures. And if they couldn't have brought that out by diplomatic, with diplomatic resources, they could have been in big, big trouble. And it looked like it had King David and some of, I mean, but there were several. And so we were looking that over. And that would have been worth a fortune, because of where it had come from. And then she had a gold rug with gold thread, and it was just amazing. And that one, she, well, would have been gold is all. But the other, anyway, here we're off on a little bit of a side, but human natural religion and religious works of the flesh, I've got three of them here that are just the core. And anywhere there's a work of the flesh, you can be involved with religion. And it's very, very interesting how that can work. There's an inconsistency, and you've got all kinds of works of the flesh that relate to various kinds of religion. Some of it are not. Some of the works of the flesh are not permitted in those religions, yet they are dominant in those religions. And so we just need to remember, it's, you know, the idolatry thing. It's kind of interesting if we think in terms of works of the flesh. We were in our friendly little passage last night that talked about covetousness. And look at how many of these countries where there are people in power, Allah, their imams and that kind of thing, that are covetous. They just want more and more and more. And they end up with a big distinction between the clergy and the laity. They have all kinds of power, and they live in their palaces. It's kind of interesting. That was true in Judaism at the time of Christ. You have palaces, literally, where those leaders who had been high priests were living. And what is that? You know, you say, you'll have no other god before me. But they had an idol. They were covetous. And they were covetousness, which is idolatry. So that's what it is. And so you have that. And I had made a note in here, there are other moral works of the flesh. And so human religion, I do not believe that in mankind that there is a vacuum that can only be filled by God. We've heard that a lot of Christians in their apologetics have really emphasized that. Every person has this vacuum. Well, the only vacuum they have is that they're dead. And so then that's different than that concept. And so we need to be aware of that. But there is this desire for something. And be reminded that a lot of it is not just the manifestation of natural revelation. On it, it's, I mean, we see it. What was the name of that movie with the pop bottle in Africa?
Oh, the gods must be crazy?
Yeah, yeah. And hilarious movie. And a pop bottle fell out of an airplane. And somebody had been praying to the gods, and then they decided that the pop bottle was a thing from the gods. It was a curse. So they're trying to get this pop bottle back to the gods. Anyway, that one was really a pretty funny movie. So this matter of the existence of supernatural powers. You know, if you want to find a supernatural power, it's not really hard to find one. More often than not, it's a demon. And that's what happens. I was reading a book a number of years ago, and they said if you have any religion, and they were talking about the cults of Christianity as well as others, and it was a book, the title related to New Age. If there's an involvement of spirit beings and a manifestation of spirit beings in their, you know, they're coming to be a religion, then this book counted them to all be New Age, because New Age was related to spirit beings. Interesting rule of thumb that they were using. So they will have supernatural power. How in the world did the magicians of Pharaoh do what they did? Were they just good stage magicians? If they were, they were sure fast. Because to be a stage magician, you have to have the right props. And so there was some supernatural enabling in that case. And so religion does have some powers. I've always wondered how much demonic activity is evident in Lourdes, France. Have you seen pictures of Lourdes? Who did they see? I think it was the Virgin Mary was in that one. And so what did they do? They go over there and there's these great healings and everything, great big piles of crutches and all of this stuff that are over there. And I just really wonder how many of them are that way. If you've ever been, they don't have the wild-eyed healing meetings like they used to quite. You know, Oral Roberts was really into that. But I went to one with A.A. Allen. And this guy had a healing line. And this one guy, he got healed, and he was running back and forth on the platform and everything. And it was a seminary night, and I would like to stay much later, but I didn't dare. It took him almost an hour to take the offering, so that was the most important part of it. And with his healing line, and so I had to leave, and I walk out, and out in the foyer of this auditorium, here's this guy, and he can hardly move. He's so crippled up. I mean, what he did on that platform really did him in. I mean, I thought, you know, he may have needed an ambulance in that matter. But some people will think, I mean, I'm not beyond saying that some people have a kind of healing. Now, we have two issues there. It can be demonic and it can be psychosomatic. Of course, their illness could have been that too. So we need to remember that. So the matter of good and evil, a being superior to man, any spirit being is going to be superior to man, and capable of doing something with life now and in the future. And don't forget that demons and Satan are linear. They're not like God in their thinking. They can project, they can evaluate, they can, you know, Satan is a master psychologist. He can read your body language better than probably any being in the universe outside of God's realm. I mean, he can tell. And we think we're good, but he is better. on it. You'll find that little twitch of your muscle behind your left ear. You know, that kind of thing that nobody else would notice. So be reminded of that matter. And this matter of right and wrong, I made a note there, and some kind of life after death. How it is amazing right now in what is called evangelical circles. You have a lot of resurgence of that old universalism. And what that means is that they believe that God loves, so everybody's going to be saved. And that universalism has been around the edges of Christendom, but it's infiltrated some people that should have known better. And so why share the gospel? And I just heard that, I read it recently, where that was an approach that was, one, I don't remember which one it was now, too many places read, and too bad a memory in that matter. Okay, so the human appetite to gratify the religious works of the flesh. We saw that in Genesis 19:8. God says, all you have to do is guard my covenant. Genesis 15. Just protect it, believe it, hang on to it, and anticipate God's provision. And they say, whatever you want us to do, we're going to do it. They wanted to find some gratification in what they could do. And essentially they were saying, God, we're good enough that we can do what you want us to do. And that's the human nature. Human nature does that. And we get in fundamental Baptist churches and they have the same problem. They want to do something. And if you go in and provide a works way to spirituality, boy, there most of them are going to grab it. As long as it doesn't sound too pagan in that. And that's really true. I mean, anything that relates to work. And, it's so interesting when you understand people who who have some concept of depravity. And yet they think they can work like mad in present tense salvation or in their future tense if they're saved. And they don't really believe in depravity. It's all messed up in that matter. So that's normal. So what did God do? He says, okay, I'll give you the gauntlet. Let's take 10 words first. Then we'll give you 613 or whatever additional, just to see if you can make it. And it is so funny to read some of the Jewish material concerning not just the Ten Commandments, but concerning the 613, if you read Orthodox Jewish stuff, like I do sometimes. In the last year, I probably read six or seven of those books. Really edifying, but very interesting because it was involved with things that I was pursuing in that matter. So, that was there.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Where were, besides the Ten Commandments, who was given all the other laws, the 600 and...
Okay.
I don't want to go on a big side trail, but that just dawned on me that I don't really know.
Well, they kicked it off with the 10. How long were they at Sinai?
20 days.
Were there almost 2 years.
Oh.
They did not move until they had fabricated everything for the tabernacle. And had constructed the tabernacle. So they could not implement it until they had a Holy of Holies and all of the ritual that went with it. And so it's interesting, right after Exodus 20, you start seeing, you have some penalties, but then you start chalking up the laws. But then when you get to Leviticus, it's really interesting. And this is Jewish. I'm not going to sit down and try to find 613. I look at their list and I smile, But you have less in Exodus than you do in Leviticus, and of course Deuteronomy. And those are 613 they pull out of the Pentateuch, out of the five books of Moses. And so those were given. Now let's do history, because this is Judaism as it is now. Is a reflection directly of 19:8 of Exodus. I mean, they want to work. I don't care whether you're Orthodox whichever part, sect of Orthodox Judaism, or conservative Judaism, which is more European and American, or Reform. Now, I didn't put an ED on it because that's not the way it is. And those are the real liberal ones, and that's pretty much an American group. Israel, the Israeli government does not recognize Reform Judaism even today. And why does that make a difference? You know, if you want to be a good Jew, you want to get married over there. And the ones who run the marriages are the Orthodox Jews, and so the any government auspices has to go through them. And they would not let them do that. In fact, they won't let them do bar mitzvahs over there in some places. I understand they won't let Reform Jews do it in at the Western Wall. And I couldn't, you know, you can't tell what's going on there. But during that time, so you remember good old Jethro. Remember Jethro? Jethro is found... So I'm trying to read and see if I'm not talking out of school here. Okay, Jethro is in Exodus 18. Jethro was Moses' father-in-law. He was the father of the little sparrow, the bird. That's Zipporah, who is Moses' wife. And so Jethro came in and he said, you're just taking too much on yourself. You look beat up. You look tired. You look like you're not getting enough sleep. You're going to die early. Well, those were the implications. And so you need to get help. And so he suggested that they appoint assistants, which ended up to be 70 elders. And so God used, and he was called a priest of the Most High, the priest of Midian. An interesting picture there. And so Jethro comes and suggests he has help. And then what happens, Moses and Aaron were the ones that normally met with Jehovah, and normally with Moses. Aaron was involved and as well. But then you'll find that there was a meeting of the elders with Moses and Aaron in what was called the Tent of Meeting. And I believe that was where they were given some instructions. And it didn't hurt to have 70 people try to remember. Yep. So that's kind of the answer. I think you can find some of them as you go. Of course, you realize if material is given in Deuteronomy, that material is after 40 years. And there's some there. So, weird stuff, you know, don't eat fish with eyes in them or something like that. No, don't eat catfish. No whiskered fish. Okay, so that's where they came from. And so you have a lot of these little incidental things. I mean, like kosher. You know, kosher is built on two verses. And it says, don't seethe the calf in its mother's milk. That's King James English. Don't boil. I mean, when you're cooking, don't cook the calf in its mother's milk. And so you have milk and meat. That's what they do with kosher. You can't cook one. I mean, you have two sets of everything. Cooking utensils, of plates, the whole thing. So, I mean, that's the way the Jews like to do it. They just take a little something from God and they're going to prove they can do it. And it was interesting, eating in the kibbutz. I think I've mentioned this before. Eating in the kibbutz. And it was their dining hall. And, you know, they would go meat and milk. And I don't think a lot of people knew what was happening all the time. They thought they were getting meat, and it wasn't. And I was sitting at a table and picked up my fork and looked at it. And, you know, I don't sit around looking at my utensils. I just want to use them. But I picked it up. And it had a Hebrew letter on it. And I looked at all of them. I thought, okay. I said, look at your utensils. You have, I'm trying to remember which it was. Might have had a lamed on it. But anyway, which is for milk. Anyway, so they, I mean, and so I looked at it from there on out. We weren't there very long, but it was, you know, when they picked up all the silverware, it went in one kitchen, if it was for milk. And so they had, I mean, lots of vegetables, very healthy. I mean, you could do very well over there, nutrition-wise. You might get tired of 25 forms of eggplant, but... Well, they had it pickled, and they had it with, I like eggplant. But it was funny, I realized, you know, I've been eating an awful lot of eggplant, and they didn't, anyway. But they had the kosher thing. I mean, so here you have a whole system based on these two little verses and a misinterpretation of them. You know, and so I have a funny feeling there was a Jewish businessman got the idea that you could make some money by having selling two sets instead of one. You know, but that's that kind of thing when you look at it. And if you're ever bored and want to look down that list, let me know, and I can let you take a gander at the Kabbalistic dictionary I have that has a list on them. I'm trying to find my other list. I can't remember where I put it and what it was in, because I've looked for it for years, and I didn't want to buy a book that had it with an exposition, a Jewish book. I think they wanted more money than I had. Okay. Now, Israel was to show the other nations round about that Jehovah was the better God of any of the gods. And when we went through Daniel, if you understand the backdrop, and we went through a little of it, but not like we could have, in Daniel, when I talked about the war of the gods, was between demonic gods and Jehovah. So the gods of Babylon, the gods of Medo-Persia, ultimately the gods of Greece, they all had gods. Some of them overlapped. Then you get into the nations round about, and it's really kind of interesting when you realize that the sons of Lot, Ammon and Moab, both were idolaters. And we read Sunday in Judges, or Joshua 24, that when Abram came out, he was an idolater. And Terah and Lot, the whole bunch of them were. And so they had the gods of Ur, or of Elam, or what do you want to call it? We won't call it Babylon quite. It became Babylon in that area. And so they had gods. And so this was rather different. You go to Egypt, and, you know, Abram had a relationship with one God who was supreme. And yet when Moses goes and meets Jehovah at Mount Horeb or Sinai and the burning bush, he doesn't even know. You know, I mean, here this voice is talking to him out of this bush that's not incinerated, and is talking to him, and he says, when they want to know, who shall I say sent me?
It's an evil spirit.
And so, yeah, he didn't even know.
I know. Opening the door.
No. Well.
I couldn't see. It
could be.
A possessed, no. Anyway. So, when we understand it, remember in the Ten Commandments what it says?
Which one?
When it relates to other gods?
Thou shalt have other gods before me.
None of them ahead of him. I mean, it was really interesting when you read that in the text. And he understood religious works of the flesh. I mean, they were just a bunch of what? One nature people. That's in nature. And so they come out of Egypt. They live in a land of polytheism. I mean, they worship dung beetles and cats and other, you know, they had the sun and all of that kind of thing. And so they were worshiping creation. And if you were to sit down and to dig around with the plagues of Egypt, Those plagues were an open confrontation with the main gods of Egypt. So, the frogs. I mean, they worship that. What was the name of the bull? The Merum. But I've got the Greek names, can't remember the Egyptian name. But anyway, they worship those things. And so, you'll not have other gods out in front of me. Don't do that. Some of them, I think, really understood it, in a way. What did Solomon do when he was a righteous? Yeah, he built a temple, he worshipped Jehovah, but what happens? He lets deities, shortly after, of his foreign women, builds a temple for the daughter of, he built a house and he built a worshiping place. And so, that's kind of important. I don't like to say that they remained idolaters. What I'm going to say is many of the Israelites were never believers. They weren't. Just because it says they were an elect nation doesn't mean that they were soteriologically elect. They were salvation-wise. God chose that nation, but it wasn't for salvation. And there were some that were. And I'm glad God knows. He knows how many were really elect as far as individuals then. He also knows those who are really elect today. And so, I mean, when we understand that, that helps us with it. And so he is identified. And I wanted to take a moment here to go to Deuteronomy 10 and verse 17. Deuteronomy 10, 17. Because this gives you the idea. They're ready to go into the land of Canaan, the promised land. They're ready to go in and occupy some of the borders and the boundaries that God had promised Abraham, not all of them, but some of them. And so they're on their way in. The irony of it is that had they believed God and done what he told them to do, theoretically they would have gotten all the boundaries from the river Euphrates to the river Nile, river of Egypt, and had that whole bunch of land. And they didn't even get a quarter of it when we understand what they didn't do. And so in Deuteronomy, get my verse here so I'm in the right place. 10:17 is what I wanted. It says, "For Jehovah your God is God of gods and Lord of lords, a great God, a mighty and a fearful, one being feared." It's a passive. It's an if-al, which regardeth not persons, nor taketh reward. He doesn't take bribes.
That's a New King James.
They translated bribes?
Yeah.
Yeah, good.
Partiality nor takes a bribe, it says.
Okay, good. So you see, I mean, he's a God of all gods. He's over them all, is what he's trying to say. And we could go to Joshua 22, it says much the same thing. But the gods of the world system don't even compare with him. And that's what the goal of Israel being in the land as a chosen people. They were to show the nations round about that there was a God that was better than their gods because his people behaved in a proper manner. And, where shall I go with that? 2 Kings 19:18. We don't spend much time in them. Historical books, and there's some interesting things there. Don't neglect reading them. But 2 Kings and 19:18 says, let's go back to 17. "Of a truth, Jehovah, the kings of Assyria have destroyed the nations in their lands. They have cast their gods into fire, for they are no gods, but the work of men's hands and wood and stone, and therefore they have destroyed them." That wasn't quite the passage you wanted, but it does tell you where the gods came from, and in that matter. And that testimony that was expected. And it's really interesting. I'm not going to be able to look at a lot of these because of the time, but he gives them instructions on letter C on page 95, I have a little list, and we can kind of work it out of Exodus, in Exodus 22 and 23. He's telling them what they're, how they're to relate to these other gods. Now, don't forget how close these verses are to Exodus 19. This is part of that two-year expansion. And you can kind of see it. A lot of this information ties with these other gods. So, oops. I get in trouble every time. I head the wrong way. And I think, what am I going this way for? Because, you know.
You don't want that New Testament revelation.
Yeah, I have a quick story. There's nothing to do with this. We went to the library sale today and went perusing it. And the Nelson New King James Reference Bible, there were a couple of them in hardback. And Radmacher and Wayne House and some others were on the editorial committee. But it was kind of funny. I was going to see what they did with the notes for a couple bucks. It was okay, hardcover. And I got it home, and I looked at it, and it was weird because there was a used section. I mean, it was worn. It was discolored, and it was discolored beginning in Romans 1, and was discolored through Philemon. Everything else looked pretty nice and clean. And the funny part was, when I opened it and I looked at the beginning of Romans, there was a note there. It said, the New Testament starts here. So somebody who had that was a hyper, and probably an extreme hyper. I couldn't figure out why they were reading Corinthians, but anyway. But to make the New Testament start in Romans 1 was really interesting, and to see that where, that's for free. It still impressed me. I thought, you know, I cannot believe this. This, you know, this edge, and the rest is just as lily white as could be. Okay, Genesis 22:28. It says, thou shalt not revile the gods, nor curse the ruler of thy people. Now, it's translated gods. It's Elohim. And it may be better to translate a god. The word kalal is it's a root here.
Genesis
22:28. Did I say Genesis? Exodus, yeah. Yeah, I don't think you got law back there.
No, I was wondering how that would fit.
Yeah. But it says, you will not revile Elohim. But if it's other gods, he's going to jump into that in the next chapter. Don't take them without some seriousness, because they're going to cause you trouble, I think is what he's trying to say here. Did they translate it God, or did they translate
God, capital G.
They did that, so they followed that Elohim translation that is obscure in the way the AV does it. Now, over in chapter 23 and verse 13, it says, in all things that I have said unto you, be circumspect. The word, the idea of being circumspect has the idea of guarding, taking, pay attention, keep the commandments. That's the word keep. It's that root. And so he says in 13, be circumspect, and do not remember the name of other gods. The King James says, do not make mention.
Yeah, it says, don't make no mention in the New King James also.
Okay, and this is the word for remember, zakir. Don't remember them. Don't give them credibility in your thinking. Neither let it be heard out of your mouth. Don't be talking about those old gods you hung around with. Abraham and the troops in Ur, Israel and the troops in Egypt. And just don't forget, you know, they really cleaned out the religious artifacts of Egypt when they left. Remember, they gave them wealth. And then a lot of them were little petty gods they had. And it was gold. And so they get at Sinai, and Moses had been hanging around up in the mountain too long. And so, the great story. I mean, that two-faced Aaron. Now,
I love that. Threw it in the fire, this is what came out.
It's accidental.
Yeah. Then it says very clearly, he carved it. On that.
What you said earlier makes me wonder, why didn't the commandment say, thou shalt have no other god, period? Why does he say before me, like, you can have some other gods, but none before me? Why
wouldn't they do that?
Why wouldn't if the commandment be just, you shall have no other god?
It would be a, I mean, they could. It has, I mean, it's a plural. And there is a singular. Like, there are two different singular forms of Elohim, or Zael and Eloah, on that. And I think that is divine. What do I want to say? I don't want to use the word compensation, but almost. For a sin nature that had an appetite for all of that stuff.
A God who understood the people.
He understood their depravity. And so he says, you get it straight. And that's what's so interesting. Now, another, it's not an aside. You look at what happens to Israel and how, when they were doing well, they tended to put Jehovah above any other god. It didn't mean they were free of gods. You look at the failure of some of those good kings. They failed to get rid of some of the groves, or the Ashtaroth, which are the pillars. They translate that pillars to worship. There were things they didn't get rid of. They would get rid of most of them, but not generally all of them. Hezekiah was pretty good, though. Hezekiah did okay, generally. But it's really interesting that you if they'd have annihilated it all, they'd have been building it somewhere else, just because of their nature. And I think that's why he didn't say God. If he had, they would all been dead. You know, I mean, that really would have been what happened. He would have killed them all. He says, don't bow down to them in 23:24 of Exodus. And there he says, thou shalt not bow down. Hithpael, for yourself. Now, if you're looking at a Hebrew text, you'd have to review some grammar. The words for bow down is shatha. And it starts with a sh sound. And hithpael, they change the letter order. And it fakes out lots of people that don't remember that rule. Because when there's a what's called a sibilant, what happens, the t of the hith is stuck between the S sound, so it's easier to pronounce. And so it looks weird. But it still has the doggish in the right place. No. Sorry, I'm talking to Don, nobody else. On that. And so 24, it says, you're not to bow down for yourselves or to do after their works. But thou shalt utterly overthrow them and quite break down their images, their pilars, their obelisks. There's a lot of words for the way their idols were. And this idea of utterly overthrow is overthrowing you will overthrow. It's an infinity that makes it real strong. I always like that Hebrew word. It's easy to remember to me. It's the word harass. Harass means to overthrow. And this idea of breaking down is means to break in pieces. So you see some of that. They're not to serve them. We'll see that in verse 32. Thou shalt make no covenant with them, nor with their gods. Don't make cut deals with their gods. That's number 5 in the notes. You're not to seek help from them, no matter how desperate you are. You know, it's interesting, in the Old Testament, if somebody's being punished for their wickedness, and Jehovah's not going to do anything about it, it makes no sense to go to some other god to try to get help. It's an insult to Jehovah. But this discussion, I have an ongoing discussion with my good friend in Colorado about praying. You know, You know, if you pray for healing, what are you doing if God is disciplining somebody and you don't know it? And you're asking God to heal them. Are you, you know, and you don't know it. Thy will be done is a whole lot better in that matter. That it's so important. Don't swear by them. Don't burn with fire. And so you have that set of ideas that are here. And so the world system is full of gods. Under three on number, page 95, I have some passages in that single space. You know, the peoples have gods. I had a call from Grant this morning. He was just going absolutely crazy. And what he's doing, I try not to, I mean, it's so easy just for me to put the Hebrew in instead of, and so I put Hebrew in, and then I usually put in italics transliteration. Well, on one word, I didn't do it last, on the message he was working on, because he puts all those messages up, the synopsis. And it was the word am, the word people. And on my BibleWorks keyboard, there are no letters. So he said he found a tilde and a semicolon and a bracket. And he said, what in the world do you mean by this? Because the bracket's the ion and the path is on the semicolon and the tilde is the final name. And I thought, oh, I have been pretty, I've been pretty careful because I know he goes crazy. Of course, he knew we were in Woodburn and there was no way he's going to find me. So anyway, okay, the Goyim, number two under C, you have the gods of Egypt, the Ammonites. Shepharvaim is a border city of Egypt. Seir, Mount Seir, you're acquainted with that. That's over on the other side of the Dead Sea. Edom's on the other side of the Dead Sea. Damascus is in Syria. Hamath is north. And Arphad are also. And so you have these, a list in 10:6 of nations with their gods. They were all around. Some overlapped, some didn't. And it's an interesting study. They are called foreign or strange gods. And so I'm going to stop here and we'll come back in this other, after other gods, working some of the Old Testament because I don't think it hurts us any. And then we'll, I hope next week, next week we'll be better, tie off religion part of it, and then we'll get into senseless warfare. And is all war evil? Is all war, you know? And so we'll be looking at that. So we'll pick up bottom of 95, tie the last couple things out. I want to talk a little bit about the other gods. Hair gods, the other gods. How that's used. Huge study in this if you were really interested in it, but it's not going to edify you in a lot of ways. Well, okay.